The Oneida Nation recently launched its sports betting operation at its main casino in Green Bay. We're discussing what it means for Wisconsin as we join 28 other states where sports betting is live and legal. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. That figure, 28 other states, that's the latest from the American Gaming Association's sports betting map. Are you a sports fan? Are you excited for sports betting now that the Oneida Nation has amended its gaming compact with the state? Should other First Nations follow suit and have it spread to more casinos? 800-642-1234. Chad Foose is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. Chad, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, Kate. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here. Introduce us, if you will, to the parameters, this new form of gaming in Wisconsin. What can we expect at your casino?
We've recently...
I think we're having some trouble hearing you, Chad. Can you hear us? I think we're having some bandwidth issues here. We're going to switch to Chad to phone so that we're able to hear Chad Foose, who is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Nation. As the United Nation recently, July 1st, came out and said it is launching its sports betting operation at its main casino in Green Bay, amended its compact with the state of Wisconsin. Are you there, Chad?
One second, I'm going to put you up. Sorry, Chad.
We're going to switch to phones here, having a little bit of technical issues. July 1st is when that compact Oneida Nation said they were going to offer sports betting, had amended their compact with the state of Wisconsin. How do you feel about this? Do you like gambling? Do you frequent Wisconsin casinos? What do you think of the addition of sports betting at Oneida Nation gaming properties? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Chad, are you with us now by phone?
I am here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Thanks for bearing with us on those issues with the digital side of things. So explain for us what is in store, what sports betting is, and what Oneida Casino is offering.
Yep. So last week, Tuesday, we did our preliminary launch of our sports bet booking. I believe, as everybody knows, in the state of Wisconsin, the Oneida Nation, Oneida Casino, is the very first casino to go live with sports bet booking. And we're all very excited up here in Green Bay. It's a new endeavor, new business, and we're hoping to capture an audience that we haven't seen at the casino. And it's really promising as far as the excitement over sports bet booking. So we have a lot of excitement from our customers.
What sports can you bet on?
Technical term that we're using is event wagering.
Okay.
Most common known as sports bet booking. So when we look at sports bet booking, we'll be offering all of the professional sports, current day sports, as well as future. We'll be offering all collegiate Division I sports, with the exception of Division I collegiate Wisconsin sports teams. We will not be able to offer bets on those teams.
What about league drafts?
Currently, we are just taking bets on games, so we are new to this endeavor, mm-hmm. and we are just getting our feet wet with this new business, and we are trying to feel out all the different bets and what the customers want. So our bets will mostly be driven by customer demand and with what our scope, working with the state of Wisconsin and our amendment compact, will allow us to do.
So what about the whole realm of fantasy sports and gaming there?
Fantasy sports, just a little bit different than sports bet booking. Fantasy sports, you're typically taking a collective group of individuals and looking at how they're going to perform. With the sports bet booking, we're looking at typically one event and how the outcome is going to look at the end of that event.
Oh, so that's like the straight bet, or I think you call it the money line betting?
Correct. So we'll have a couple of different types of bets. You can bet the straight bet, money line bet. You can bet the over and under. And in the future, we're going to be rolling out a new way to bet. But we're working on that technology right now to make sure that it works and it's going to meet our customer demand.
Yeah,
and that would be our mobile app.
Well, before we get to the app, that's kind of where my eyes glaze over when there are these teasers, props, parlays. There's terminology and ways in this type of wagering that is still a bit confusing to me. Are you offering those types of wagers, or is this still going to be just straight betting?
So we have a different couple of different types of wagerings that you can currently do. So let's kind of start from the ground up.
Okay.
The ways that you can bet is we have a retail betting solution, which is really going up to a human and having human interaction with the cashier and making a bet that way. The second way that we offer bets is we have a standalone kiosk where you simply walk up to a kiosk, very similar to how you would make a transaction on an ATM. It's all touch screen. You can scroll through, pick what sport you want to bet on, pick what game you want to bet on, pick if you want it on that day or if it's a future bet. Once you decide how you want to bet based on the cashier, retail, or the kiosk, then you have a different couple of different bets you can make. Obviously, a straight up bet. I would like to see the Chicago Bears beat the Minnesota Vikings, so you'd bet on the Chicago Bears.
I see how you left Green Bay out of this, by the way. Very diplomatic there. Carry on.
That's one type of bet that you can make, essentially a straight up bet. The other one is you have an over and under. So you want to, we'll post a over and under score. So if you think that the Chicago Bears and the Minnesota Vikings will, with their point total, we'll just use a number of 50. If you think that they're going to combined score 50 points or more, you can bet that they're going to score 50 points more. If you don't think they're going to score 50 points, you can also bet that way, more of an over and under. And yes, you're absolutely right. We do have a parlay. A parlay is a more than one singular bet, essentially, and you are predicting different games. So you may.
Oh, goodness.
It's a challenge. A lot of people enjoy that challenge of trying to pick the right winners. So an example, you may want to look at saying, I want to bet on the Chicago and Minnesota Vikings game, and I'm going to pick Chicago to win. And another bet on that parlay may be, I want to bet on the Denver Nuggets and the Sacramento Kings, and I'd like to see the Sacramento Kings from the NBA side. And then your third bet may be on NHL hockey. I want to see the Los Angeles Kings beat the Anaheim Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a more difficult type of bet, but aggregately, the more teams that you put on that parlay, your reward essentially becomes higher if you are able to predict those games.
Well, stepping with the way of betting and these mechanisms of these wagers, why did the Oneida Nation want to add this to casino offerings?
There's a couple of different reasons why we'd want to offer this. First and foremost, we work well with our local business and convention bureau, and one of their goals is to drive tourism. And we have a professional NFL team in the area that we work very well with. We work well with the tourism industry. As Oneida Casino is one of the more popular entertainment areas in Green Bay, one of the main goals is how do we capture more tourism into the Green Bay metropolitan area as a whole? And one of our ideas a few years ago was we really wanted to pursue sports event wagering, just purely because we knew it would drive some individuals from outside of our immediate area. And they would then hopefully visit some of our restaurants, visit our casino, possibly visit the Hall of Fame, maybe do some shopping. So
that's a tourist draw was one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's kind of the bigger picture of one of the reasons that we're looking at it. Another reason is because we know from a lot of our research is that, and I believe the state of Wisconsin knows that we have a lot of sports fanatics. We have a lot of individuals who love their professional sports, love their collegiate sports in the state of Wisconsin. And what we also know is that we have a lot of individuals who enjoy gambling as their entertainment experience.
And we're going to get to that in a moment. Okay. I'm going to reintroduce you here, Chad Foose, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino, as we discuss Wisconsin's entry into legal sports betting. Do you like gambling? Do you frequent Wisconsin casinos? Will you head to Green Bay to make wagers on sports? What do you think of the addition of sports betting? Well, talk about it with you, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. The Oneida Nation announced on July 1st it had agreed to amend its gaming compact with Wisconsin to add sports betting to its casino offerings. It opened its sportsbook operation at the Oneida Main Casino last week. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We join our neighbors, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan, 29 states in all, with legal live sports wagering. Are you worried that sports betting will cause harm to people with gambling addictions? Have you been to Las Vegas for sports gambling? Why do you think sports betting should be legal here? Join in, 800-642-1234. Chad Foose is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. Stays with us. Chad, I want to talk a little bit about revenue. Sports betting surged in the pandemic. Looking at revenue here, record revenue, $1.5 billion last year, up 69% from the previous year. That's from the American Gaming Association. And I understand you're not going to share any revenue projections with us. However, in the first quarter of this year, sports betting revenues increased 270% from the last year, another record. I would imagine that these numbers cause you pause, give you very high expectations. What can you say to this surge in sports gambling revenue and apply your financial insights to Wisconsin?
The way I would describe the revenue piece of it is each jurisdiction, as you alluded to being states, approximately 28 to 29 states have legalized sports betting currently. Our scenario is just a little bit different of the models that most of these states are following. So most of the states have a app right now where the majority of their betting takes place. We currently do not have an app. And when I talk about an app, it's really where you can do mobile wagering within a confined area. So an example, we would take the state of Michigan. The state of Michigan as a whole has approved to offer sports event wagering statewide. So what that means is anybody who has any of the casino apps throughout the state, they can make a mobile wager bet because it's approved statewide. Now, in the state of Wisconsin, the mobile app that we're going to be rolling out in the future is only going to be dedicated to certain parcels of land that we agreed on with the state of Wisconsin. So all those parcels of land will land within our reservation boundaries, and they'll be at some of our commercial properties, meaning we have five facilities that offer gaming. So we'll offer that mobile app at those five facilities, and then we have some other areas within the reservation that we'll be offering that mobile app at. It won't be reservation-wide, but it'll be regulated to 10 to 11 different parcels within the reservation. So that kind of takes away a little bit of that incentive to use the mobile app for sports event wagering. And
My past recollection, about 85% of bets that are made on a mobile app. So when we look at the revenue, it's very positive throughout the nation as a whole. We don't think we're going to see the same effect. We will see some positivity of when we introduce the app, because we're going to introduce another piece on that app, which is going to be called in-play betting.
So you're saying that once the app is up and running, that will be able, you'll be able to expand more and be able to see more, just more revenue generation, I would imagine, so that more people can be wagering and do it more easily from their phones instead of doing it in person?
Correct. But in the same sentence, we have to also remember that when they're going to make that mobile wagering on that app, it's going to be into a confined space on a reservation where our casinos are. So if you picture, our casino and then part of the parking lot, maybe the parking ramp, maybe the hotel next door, that's really where they'll be able to utilize that mobile app. As they get off that parcel of land and onto the main thoroughways, the highways and stuff like that, they won't have the ability to make that bet anymore. They'll have the ability to use the app, but they won't have the ability to make a bet outside of a certain area. And it's really working with a technology called geofencing that's going to regulate when that app is accessible and when it's not.
We're talking with Chad Foose, who is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. We're learning about its new sports betting operation. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Todd is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd. What are your thoughts?
Hey, good morning. No, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I live in Green Bay. I've been looking forward to the sportsbook opening up at Oneida ever since I heard it back in summer. I've been there a couple times already, and I'm just really excited. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of harm in it. There's tons of ways to bet on sports today, right? With all the legal prop betting, there's that fine odd line between what's sports betting and what and what's not illegal gambling online, right? So there's things like FanDuel and DraftKings, and I honestly don't see the harm in it. I, as a younger man, you know, if you Google out on the internet, you can find ways to bet on sports that, you know, I feel like it's stuff that's maybe not as legal or a little bit on the shady side. So if you Google, you can find ways to spend your money, and then there's shady practices. So people who are looking for it can find it in areas that are kind of shady. It's nice having a legal operation local that I can make sports bets on, and it's a little bit more exciting that way. So I'm excited for it.
How were those experiences for you the two times you've visited?
They were great. They were great. The kiosks at the main location there, everyone was super friendly, and a bunch of TVs set up. So it was exciting. It's a nice setup they have, and it's been a good experience.
Todd, thanks for the call. Chad, I want to toss this back to you, because we are seeing the legalization, especially after the Supreme Court ruling in 2018 in states beyond Nevada. And, you know, we just heard there Todd bringing up FanDuel and DraftKings, which is everywhere. Do you think there are enough protections in place for problem gambling and for illicit activities like illegal gambling or money laundering?
Let me cover a couple of those topics. First of all, Todd, thank you for sharing your experience. We really appreciate that. And before I go into some of your questions, Kate, I just want to let everybody know the experience that Todd had in the next 2 months, we'll be enhancing that experience, as the sports bet booking facility on site is a temporary one, and we are moving into our closed down sports bar and remodeling that hall to be more of a Las Vegas experience sports book, I think. And then when we come to the legal and illegal side of sports bet booking events.
The guardrails, so to speak. Go ahead.
Yeah. So we'd be naive to think that there's not an illegal market out there. Unfortunately, we don't know how large that illegal market is. But what our goal is to offer something that the customers trust is being done correctly. And when I say trust being done correctly, we want to uphold the most integrity of the sports event wagering. And at the end of the day, we have five oversight bodies that really review what we're doing. And we're one of the most heavily regulated industries in the state of Wisconsin as well as the United States. Those five oversight bodies are the National Indian Gaming Commission, our own internal gaming commission, our external financial auditors, the state of Wisconsin, as well as the IRS, who audits us for Title 31, which is cash transactions and anti-money laundering programs.
Chad, thank you for joining us. Chad Foos, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. For disclosure, the Oneida Nation is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just ahead, you have a line to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin as we drill down on a number of issues facing Wisconsin, including infrastructure funding, where she sees that money going. What do you want to ask Senator Baldwin? 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A bit of a roadmap for what we hope to touch on in our time together. The bipartisan infrastructure law and what President Biden's spending agenda means for Wisconsin. The Kyle Rittenhouse acquittal in our country's deep division over gun laws. We start with the Waukesha parade tragedy and Baldwin's reflections on the Senate floor. What are your questions for Senator Baldwin? What are your biggest concerns, especially in these pandemic times? 800-642-1234. Senator Tammy Baldwin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much. It's great to join you.
Six people died, more than 60 injured in that tragedy in Waukesha. You joined with your colleague across the aisle, Senator Ron Johnson, demanding outside groups not use this atrocity for political gain. Can you tell us about the message you were trying to send here?
Yes. First of all, Waukesha was really trying so hard and I think has been successful in really unifying and standing together to heal. What a horrific tragedy, struck there on November 21st. And the idea that outside groups would try to politicize the tragedy was, I think, really disturbing. And so after consulting with local officials, we were pleased to stand together and say, don't politicize, don't divide. This is a time for unity. And we took it a step further and observed a moment of silence on the Senate floor, recognizing the lives lost, but also so many who just witnessed things that they will never forget. And it is, such a tragedy, such senseless violence.
What I heard from you on the Senate floor, I think, was community. Don't continue to attack each other. Don't attack your community. And, this year started, as you're well aware, with the Capitol riot. We bookend here with the Waukesha tragedy. When you walk the halls of Congress, as you have for the past 23 years, how strained are relationships? How are lawmakers getting along or not?
Obviously there is heightened partisanship right now. It is not reflective, though, of the personal relationships that senators have. I would say that the disagreements, the conflict, is what is in the headlines. And I would also say that if you were studying the daily activities. Just take yesterday, for example, you would see, you know, the roll call votes, and then you'd see by unanimous consent, the Senate passed this, that, the other thing. So it sort of operates on two levels, if you will. We do a lot of bipartisan work. Doesn't get really featured in the headlines, but there's also, I mean, it is a terribly polarized time, and I hope we can see our way through that to greater cooperation.
I want to move on to Kyle Rittenhouse's jury acquittal last month, all charges from last year during the night of civil unrest in Kenosha, where he fatally shot two people. It really brought our nation's gun laws into sharper conversation and really at this crossroads for what is self-defense when our nation is awash with guns and semi-automatic weapons. For you, as senator, what measures, what actions are you backing that will break the cycle of violence in our communities?
Well, I very much support universal background checks. And that, in my mind, would be it's something that 90%.
I think we're having some trouble hearing you. Are you still there, Senator Tammy Baldwin? I think we just lost Senator Tammy Baldwin here. As we talk about the latest issues facing Wisconsin, I think I see her on the line. Is she still there? No, she is not there. We're going to try to get her back on the line. Meanwhile, what is on your mind as we talk about issues facing Wisconsin with Senator Tammy Baldwin? You can join in pressing issues. How is the federal government handling infrastructure in Wisconsin, like roads, public transportation, water quality? Should the government provide more stimulus checks or extend unemployment compensation into the new year? Are there issues that you'd like Senator Baldwin to tackle? Let us know, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation with Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin as we discuss the pressing issues facing Wisconsin. We are talking about the gun laws in America and the Rittenhouse acquittal. Steve in Sun Prairie has a question along those lines. Steve, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I do find it funny. I did hear the senator's opening monologue about trying to find unity, yet I just read her statement in relation to Rittenhouse, and it was the most divisive, inaccurate thing I've read in a long time. You know, what happened with Rittenhouse was he defended himself from three people were attacking him. Is the senator's heart so hateful that she would want someone she disagrees with to be killed when they're being attacked, or should they have the right to defend themselves?
Senator Baldwin, go ahead.
Yeah, so here are the facts. Kyle Rittenhouse was a minor at the time, traveled from Illinois, and he picked up a AR-15 rifle in Wisconsin that was illegally purchased for him. And then he kind of took the law in his own hands during a riot. He killed two people and injured another. In Wisconsin, during the trial, the judge has now ruled that it's legal for a minor to walk the streets in Wisconsin with an assault weapon. I do feel that there was just no accountability. And the other thing that was very apparent during the trial was that had he not had a weapon, there would have been a different outcome had he, held somebody in a chokehold or something like that. So the weapon was a factor in in the jury's decision. I think just starting with the question you asked before the break, is that universal background checks and stopping straw purchasers would be a well-supported and prudent thing for the Congress of the United States to pass.
Well, to pick up on that, the White House continues to push Congress on aspects of gun control that have to route through you, essentially, route through your chamber, like universal background checks, like banning high-capacity magazines. Do you see any movement, any ability to get gun laws passed in your chamber?
Not in the near term, because our agenda for the balance of the year is quite full, as we may talk about with the Build Back Better budget and a number of other must-pass legislation. But I think when we begin the new year, that's a priority that should come to the front again.
Let's move on to the massive bipartisan infrastructure law. For Wisconsin, that means billions over 5 years for highways, hundreds of millions public transit, $100 million to expand broadband. There's hundreds of millions for water infrastructure. So something you said, though, I want to piece out. You said it prioritizes projects and communities often overlooked. How so? Senator Baldwin, are you there? I think we're having another connection issue as we talk with Senator Tammy Baldwin. Can you hear us, Senator Baldwin? And I think our line just went dead once again as we talk with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin on a range of issues and issues that you want to talk about as well. Infrastructure law, broadband, PFAS, water infrastructure. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234 as we work to get Senator Tammy Baldwin back on the line and looking at major issues facing Wisconsin, pressing issues facing our communities, and wondering, is the federal government doing enough to help states maintain and upgrade roads, bridges, public transportation, keep water safe to drink? How do you feel about Congress's work addressing these things? Senator Baldwin, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Go ahead on the infrastructure law. And you said it prioritizing projects and communities often overlooked.
Yes. I think obviously the bill defines infrastructure very broadly, but let's take just a couple of examples. Broadband, we saw during the pandemic how essential having high-speed broadband is for education when schools turn to virtual learning, for healthcare when so many hospitals and clinics focused only on COVID-19 and other people had continuing healthcare needs, we started greater reliance on telehealth. And we still have in Wisconsin way too many folks who don't have access to high-speed internet. This bipartisan infrastructure bill will, by the end of the decade, deploy high-speed broadband universally. That is the aspiration, and we need to make sure there's adequate oversight to make that happen. Another example is...
Well, I want to just pause right there because we talked earlier this week with the PSC chair, Rebecca Cameron-Vock, who said, you know, something that came up again and again is that fiber is being laid, but a person's house is just off the road to where they need to connect in. And who pays for that? So what do you envision that this high-speed internet money doing? What will it accomplish?
Well, in some cases, it will be about laying fiber, or it's sort of it's neutral with regard to what form of high-speed broadband. So it could be satellite-based, it could be Wi-Fi, it could be fiber. But the idea is that not everybody is very close to the middle mile, let's call it. But where they are, it will be up to, whether it's grants to the internet service providers or municipalities, co-ops, et cetera. I'm very focused on also making sure that we have adequate oversight of this, because this is an area where there's many, many actors. Mm-hmm. And so we have three federal agencies that have oversight over broadband. As you were talking, the state has oversight too. So we have the U.S. Department of Agriculture and their rural development has broadband responsibilities, the Federal Communications Commission and the NTIA. We have to make sure as we implement this and make sure that broadband is going to be universally available and affordable, that there is effective coordination. But we need to make sure that everybody has the opportunities provided by broadband. And I think we should look at it like rural electrification.
Well, and let's pause there on electrification, because Tom in Madison along those lines wants to talk. Tom, hi.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Thanks for having me on. I know Senator Baldwin is on the Transportation Committee in the Senate. And with this infrastructure bill, I think they should address electric vehicles. I don't think Americans are going to accept electric vehicles because of their short range and long charging times. And I don't think you're going to be able to have enough charging stations to prevent long lines from forming at their locations. I think the United States should invest in electrified roadways that can charge and provide the motive force for electric vehicles, so there isn't going to be charge anxiety. This has been done. Stockholm has an electrified highway near the airport, 20 kilometers, and Michigan is putting one in. Indiana and Utah are studying this, but these are haphazard state-type approaches, and it's going to take a national mandate to try to get this done.
Tom, thanks. Let's get Senator Baldwin to weigh in here. Go ahead, Senator Baldwin.
Well, there's a lot of initiatives sort of moving in the direction of electrifying our transportation infrastructure. Among them is President Biden's direction of let's lead by example. Let's have an electrified federal fleet as we replace older vehicles that are a part of the various agencies in the federal government. And certainly the bipartisan infrastructure bill creates the opportunity for many, many additional charging stations for electric vehicles. But it's a first step. The Build Back Better budget, which we are working on right now in the Congress, would add to that. But it is, it's a huge pivot. And I appreciate the caller's ambition in terms of, moving even further beyond that. But I think, one step at a time. We have the major car companies in the U.S. Committing to to produce a much greater number of electric vehicles in the next decade. And I think we'll see a major pivot in the U.S.
Within infrastructure, water, I want to touch on a moment. People in the town of Peshtigo, they've been brushing their teeth with bottled water for years, several years, drinking bottled water for several years, living with PFAS-polluted wells. Peshtigo not alone, DNR finding well contamination with forever chemicals in dozens of sites around Wisconsin. What is the federal government's role in addressing this pollution?
Yes, well, there's several aspects to that, and I appreciate that question. PFAS has been found in the drinking water of several communities. Typically, it's communities that are proximate to airports where they have used firefighting foams that contain PFAS. And it has contaminated the groundwater. We have to learn, first of all, more about the impact of PFAS on human health. And there has to be a federal standard that says what the acceptable level, if any, of PFAS is in drinking water. And states obviously have a role, too, in creating those standards. But we also have to learn more about remediation. And right now, with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, as you mentioned earlier, there is a significant amount of funding that is dedicated to remediation of PFAS contaminants. And you know, we're going to be remediating at the same time as we are also learning more about about the risks to human health.
And we only have a few seconds left. Very quickly, you mentioned Biden's Build Back Better Act. The House passed it late last month. What are the prospects in your chamber in the Senate?
I believe that we will pass that piece of legislation before Christmas. It is it has been a painstaking process, but it is so essential. I have always said that the Build Back Better budget goes hand in glove with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, particularly because of the workforce issues, and people have struggled to return to the workforce after this pandemic, and that is because they have not been able to attain things like adequate child care and home care or retraining for new jobs.
And Senator Baldwin, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us here on the Ideas Network.